This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, where we answer your questions. We're back. We're together fielding questions from listeners. Radio program at AOL.com is the address for questions. And it's sort of harder and harder to kind of, it's like re-entry from summer world into...
Yeah.
You know, get sitting under the fluorescent lights in the office seeing patients. It's so weird. I mean, my life is so schizophrenic. It's like, this idyllic summer, active in the sun, in the water, grilling outside. And then I come in to the city to see patients. And then I turn around and I head back out to the beach.
Yeah.
You too, right?
Me too. Me too. You go to the South Fork, I go to the North Fork.
Right.
It is weird. And, you know, you've been doing that for years.
Yes.
But I've just started doing that recently. And it does feel schizophrenic. It's like, where am I waking up in the morning going, which bed am I in? You know, back in New York or back, you know,
and then the
in
question
Queens
is,
or out there.
You know, do I wear a tie or do I wear like a,
T-shirt? My cutoffs and my T-shirt.
And cutoffs, right. and flip-flops.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It's like, well,
right.
Yeah, or the 5-day scraggly beard.
Right.
Because I don't shave when I'm out there. And then I come in, I clean up my act, you know, I'm clean shaven.
Right.
I, you know, present a whole, well, anyway. That doesn't come across very much on audio, but here we are, and we're re-entering
the New York City zone.
Right, and the podcast
and the feeling,
zone.
Yeah.
Right. So before we get to questions, radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions, so we thank you for questions. We actually had a little bit of a summer lull where, you know, we were starting to think like, whoa, our mailbag is drying up. But now I think people are...
We're getting a lot more questions. Keep them coming,
keep
everybody.
Keep them coming, because they're the grist for the mill for this.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, though, there was we were regaled by headlines this week.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw the headline.
I did.
Which is paleo diet, something to the effect of, you know, I have the story here somewhere, which is paleo diet...
may increase
risk for cardiovascular disease.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Something along those lines. And I have that story actually here on my trusty iPad. But to me, you know, I did a little bit of a deeper dive on that. And it's a little bit like the keto crotch story. Remember the keto crotch story?
Keto crotch.
The keto crotch is coming back in a new form.
Oh, no.
The keto crotch story being that if you on a keto diet, it's going to make your parts odoriferous. Here's the headline. Here's the story. I actually have the story here, okay? The story has something to do with heart disease biomarker linked to paleo diet. That's a little more sophisticated than, you know, keto crotch. But it's it is by several steps an inferential study. In other words, if this, then that, then that, then this, then that, chain of causation that is a little bit tenuous, shall we say. I'm trying to be charitable here. People who follow the paleo diet have twice the amount of a key blood biomarker linked closely to heart disease. The world's first major study examining the impact of the diet on gut bacteria has found. The researcher from the Edith Cowan University, never heard of it, but it's in Australia, 44 people on the diet were compared with 47 following a traditional Australian diet. Mm-hmm. What is that? You know, kangaroo meat or, you know.
Traditional Australian diet.
There's a lot of beer.
I would imagine, yeah. Yeah.
It's like.
Could be kangaroo, could be more even plant foods, could be, wow, it could be any number of things.
Outback Steakhouse?
Outback Steakhouse.
Yeah.
You know, they have a gluten-free menu.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Okay.
They have
so anyway, so here's what they say. The controversial paleo or caveman diet advocates eating meat, vegetables, nuts, and limited fruit and excludes grains, legumes, dairy, salt, refined sugar, and processed oils. Lead researcher Dr. Angela Giannone said that with the diet's growing popularity, it was important to understand the impact it could have on overall health. Many paleo diet proponents claim the diet is beneficial to gut health, but this research suggests that when it comes to the production of TMAO in the gut, the paleo diet could be having an adverse impact in terms of heart health. Hmm. Okay. So, interesting, because let's talk about what's TMAO as opposed to LMAO, which is an abbreviation on...
Laugh my butt off.
Yes, right. You know, for those not into the lingo.
Yes.
But anybody under the age of, like, 35 knows what LMAO is.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of like raffle, rolling on the floor,
laughing.
Mm-hmm. You know, which is an abbreviation on... It's, you know, it's like language is evolving.
Yes.
TMAO is trimethylamine oxidase, and it is supposed to be a bad guy, a risk factor when it comes to heart disease. And I think we should be measuring that a little more in our current practice. It's a little harder test to get, but it's gettable. And when we measure cholesterol and homocysteine and Lp little a, you know, it might be worthwhile
it's
looking
gettable.
At. Yeah, it's gettable. Mm-hmm. It's gettable. But the question is... Is it really linked to cardiovascular disease? And I'm actually stealing my own thunder here because I'm writing an article about this, about the TMAO controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
if indeed the paleo diet was bad for the heart, we could say that humans might not have evolved because the paleo diet is the evolutionary diet. So if it was really bad for the heart, people would have not
we
survived.
We would have perished. We'd perished.
But there's a little wrinkle to that, is that humans achieve reproductive optimization by the age of 30 or 35 in traditional cultures, right? You know, you get pregnant early, and yet, so it wouldn't matter if you ate a diet that could affect your heart, because it would, you'd have to live to like 50, 60, 70, 80 to experience the downsides of that. So I'm not going to take that off the table, is that there may be some downsides to the production of TMAO in the gut.
Right.
But let's look, what are the things that produce trimethylamine oxidase? One is choline, which comes from fish.
Yes.
And virtually every study that you look at suggests that a diet heavy in fish is not bad for the heart.
No.
Au contraire, it's beneficial for the heart.
Look at the Inuit. Yeah.
That's right. So, that makes me wonder, you know, is TMAO really causing problems?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is carnitine is a source of TMAO. But every study that we've seen suggests that carnitine is beneficial for the heart.
Yes.
As a supplement. It's, it's a heart-healthy supplement. In people who have heart disease, it's actually good for them.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, what's going on with TMAO? Well, here's another issue with TMAO, is that some people produce it when they consume fish and meat, and some people don't.
Mm.
And the reason is because of the gut flora.
Yeah.
And so it may be that because of dysbiosis or bad gut flora that some people produce it, and that that may not occur in a true Paleolithic context.
We can compare this, I think, readily to somebody who produces kidney stones.
Okay.
The oxalate in very healthy foods, your berries, your spinach, your tea, all of that.
Could be fun.
They don't metabolize it properly.
There's a thing called Oxalobacter.
Yes, Oxalobacter formigenes.
Oh.
Which in a healthy gut, there would be plenty of to help metabolize it.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to be a stone former.
Right.
So those people making the TMAO are lacking something in the gut or the proper probiotic, prebiotic, etc.
Right. So maybe something about the modern
to metabolize
gut
it
or a
properly.
Gut that has been treated with antibiotics or something. By the way, antibiotics broad spectrum antibiotics reduce the production of TMAO. Some people propose that people with high TMAO, the treatment is, you know, come up with a drug and we'll fix that.
Wow.
But is it something we need to fix? That's the question.
Yeah.
So I read very scholarly articles, very recent articles, some of them 2018, 2019, which discuss this, and it's sort of like TMAO, friend or foe, is it implicated? We don't know. So I think
it's made a rhyme.
It's right. So it's a little bit, I think it's kind of catchy to say, oh, we study the paleolithic diet, and like, surprise, surprise, it's bad for you, just like we probably already thought. You know, this diet fad is, you know, you people are deluding yourselves. You're going to get keto crotch, and you're going to die of heart disease. You know, it's kind of catchy, and it got a headline for a relatively obscure researcher at a university in Australia out of a study that is maybe a little questionable.
Yeah.
But it was headline grabbing, and, you know, every vegetarian blogger posted this study as in defense of vegetarianism.
I'll bet they just ate it up.
They just ate it up because it was fodder for their vegetarianism, their what they already believe.
Yes.
So the other thing that's interesting is it turns out that resveratrol is very good at suppressing TMAO production.
Mm.
So we might say, hey, you know, let's check for TMAO in somebody who has cardiovascular surprising amount of plaque or cardiovascular risk, premature need for a stent or bypass. Well, maybe they're producing TMAO. Well, let's fix their gut flora rather than putting them on a big, you know, starchy diet, you know, having them eat tons of oatmeal, which is another subject we're going to touch upon today.
Yeah.
Because the meat and the fish were bad for them. You know, that's all I'm saying. And I think, you know, I'll formulate my thoughts on this, and my article will appear. Some of you listen to this in a delayed fashion. The article may already be up on our website at drhoffman.com. It's about TMAO.
Terrific. Look forward to that.
Okay.
Wow.
So
much rests on the microbiome.
Yeah.
Metabolizing all of these, quote, markers or metabolites or all of that. So it's important to get a true whole picture.
But, you know, we have to be open to these interpretations.
We do.
Because
we do.
It may be that in a subset of people who are on a carnivore diet, very high amounts of meat, that they may generate a risk factor for cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
Whereas other people do not. I mean, it'd be interesting to look at my TMAO levels because I eat quite a lot of animal protein. I think you do too.
I do.
And
fish.
I've been tested. I don't know if you have been or are willing to get tested.
Not for TMAO, I haven't, but I'd be willing to, yeah.
But, you know, the ultimate test would be to get the coronary artery calcification test, which is zero in my case.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but many genetic factors go into this.
Interesting stuff. Okay, we've got an email here from Michael. Michael writes to me, "Dear Layla, your articles are always enlightening and spot on, with the exception of your latest article on the clinical hazards of oatmeal." I like the way you termed that, Michael, the clinical hazards of oatmeal.
You didn't call it that.
Chuckle. I didn't call it that.
Okay.
Yeah. "Nearly all the rigorous studies I have read actually support the consumption of oats as a means of managing insulin spikes. With its relatively low glycemic index and nutritional value, oatmeal should not be a concern for pre-diabetics or diabetics."
Stop here just a second. Different strokes for different folks.
Yes.
Glycemic index is not valuable.
It's not. Not like glycemic load is. You know,
because they're the Israeli researchers who recently did, even glycemic load.
Yeah.
That they found very individualized responses to different foods.
That's true.
Some people, there could be no problem with oatmeal, and other people could see a big surge in blood sugar and insulin.
Exactly.
Based on, again, the microbiome or other genetic factors.
Yep. And Michael is saying...
And it can be predicted by looking at the flora. The Israeli researchers have come up with a test called the day two test, which is very interesting. You send a stool sample, and they'll tell you what foods are likely to help you better control blood sugar.
There you go.
Based on your your GI flora. Composition, your flora.
Yeah.
Now, that may be a bridge too far or a bit of a speculative leap, mm-hmm. but I've talked to some people who have really straightened out their blood sugar by following the day two suggestions. And paradoxical things come up. They can eat things that are fairly high in carbohydrates and do fine. Mm-hmm. And
alternatively eat something lower and something else happens.
Like one patient, buckwheat, sent her blood sugar through the roof. And it's a very high fiber, low glycemic index grain.
Yeah, yeah.
Whole groat buckwheat.
Whole groat, not the partially, not the cut
parts. Kasha varnishkas, you know, not that kind of thing, which is
an Eastern
European dish.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Michael, you're saying that nearly all the rigorous studies you've read support the consumption of oats. There's no N of one. And in my clinical practice, I have seen over and over again that those who have diabetes, full-blown or even pre-diabetes, if they continue to eat oatmeal, they don't get the A1C that would be optimal.
Right.
Or and in
their
best interest.
They need very strict carbohydrate restriction.
Now, of course, choosing steel-cut oats or a good kind of oatmeal from the bucket of flan and donut diet is still great.
Right. So
it's still better.
No.
However, it doesn't go all the way.
Not that many of you have made steel cut oats, but the only way to make steel cut oats is either with a pressure cooker or get a crock pot. And this is a premeditated thing. You can't just wake up and say, well, there's a steel cut oats. So I'll just pour it into a pot, you know, and I'll, you know.
You got to cook it for 45
minutes.
I'll
turn on the heat and I'll brush my teeth and I'll come back and be ready. No, it's not like that.
Yeah.
It has to be cooked to death.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of chewy.
Yes.
And so here's one of these recommendations that gets lost in translation. A lot of people say, well, oatmeal's good. So they get these little packets of instant oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
Instant oatmeal is basically almost like flour.
It's pre-digested.
It's pre-cooked, pre-digested.
Mechanically pre-digested.
It's made very starchy. Mm-hmm. And the fiber is degraded or almost absent. So, So that's one point, is that a lesson that is derived from steel cut cannot be, you cannot infer that instant oatmeal or even quick oatmeal, or even the kind that takes 45 minutes to make, is going to be the equivalent of steel cut oats. The other thing is, this is a lecture that I did in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I would do a lecture on talking about precisely this subject, is oatmeal good for cardiovascular disease? And there's a cartoon of a guy standing by this mountain of oatmeal. And the caption is, the amount of oatmeal you'd have to eat in a lifetime to reduce your cardiovascular risk. And so it's a little tiny person. And there's like this like Mount Everest of oatmeal.
Yeah.
So that's the studies show that you got to eat a lot of oatmeal.
Right, right.
And oatmeal, it's got satiety value. It's very high fiber.
Yes.
And it's going to push out some other foods.
That's true. That's true.
So,
yeah.
But
the bottom line on oatmeal with my pre-diabetic, diabetic patients, if they've got an A1C of 5.8 or of 6.2, when we get rid of the oatmeal, Michael, when we get rid of the grain food group, which is the highest in carbohydrate, I see that A1C come down over and over and over again.
And I can attest to that.
Yeah.
And here's
that's
the other
why,
thing. Mm-hmm. Second meal effect. Mm-hmm. Very important.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you start your, like my breakfast today, and I'm still going strong, it's like noon.
Yeah.
I had breakfast at like 7.
Mm-hmm.
I just had two eggs scrambled with salt and pepper and ghee.
And ghee,
and
nice.
I'm a little hungry, but I'm doing fine. If I'd had a big bowl of oatmeal, I would be, my blood sugar would be plummeting.
Oh, yeah, I'd be hungry by 10:30.
Yeah.
Forget
it would
about
be
it.
It would promote, even in that meal, if that meal is not that caloric, it promotes hunger later.
Yes.
But for some people, not for everyone.
Right. And another example.
That's why some vegetarians are perfectly happy. They're doing great.
Yeah.
God bless them. They found nirvana.
They found it.
Something that works
for
them.
We're not going to mess with that if that works. Sure.
Meets their microbiome specifications. It's all good.
Exactly. The other thing I'll attest to, Michael, is I've told many of my patients, pre-diabetic and diabetic alike, you make that breakfast meal perfect and not an oatmeal, you're going to get a better result blood sugar-wise, hunger-wise, and hunger is the real tell that you've destabilized your blood sugar. And I've seen it happen over and over again with oatmeal and even with steel-cut oatmeal. So, yes, there are rigorous studies out there, but they don't match with my cases of which I've been doing now for 15 years.
Yeah, I mean,
if it were the case, I would say, hey, eat
oatmeal. Some of those studies are, mm-hmm. you know, take people eating a standard American diet,
right,
and instead substitute a lot of oatmeal, they're going to do better.
Of course, because oatmeal is better than Fruit Loops. Right. Oatmeal is better than a cinnamon bun.
Better than a croissant.
Yes. You know,
for breakfast.
Right. Right.
Right. Okay.
So that's really what they're looking at.
Yeah. Or better than even some of the higher fat kinds of meals are mm-hmm. mixed with a lot of carbohydrates, so that you will have an Egg McMuffin. Okay. Well, but that's still a lot of fat and carbohydrates together.
Yes.
Are the what ignite caloric storage in
yes,
the body.
Yes, absolutely, because they spike insulin.
And, absolutely. You know, I commented on that, you know, with this, there's this relatively obscure diet making the rounds called the autumnal diet, mm-hmm. and I wrote about this, is on the idea that squirrels hibernate in the winter, and what is very plentiful in the fall is acorns. Acorns
yeah.
are a combination of fat and carbohydrates that is great for fat storage, so that the squirrels who don't have any food and, you know, go into hibernation have something to, they get fat. You see these squirrels, you go,
yes.
Oh my God, look at that big fat squirrel. It's like, you don't see that squirrel in March or April looking like that. They
right.
kind of
they're
scraggly.
Scrawny at that
yeah, they're
point.
Scrawny. But they, mm-hmm. they can accumulate fat with mm-hmm. that kind of food. Well, forget acorns. I mean, an Egg McMuffin
yeah.
is would make a squirrel into a blimp, you know, if they could
yes.
eat it. And
yes.
they're making us into blimps because...
Yeah, they are.
So the point of the diet is, if you want, have a very low-fat diet, great, mm-hmm. that's going to work. Or very high-fat diet, almost no carbs, that's going to work too.
Yeah.
But don't... The combination that makes you fat is a lot of carbs and a lot of fat. And by the way,
yeah.
it's the most scrumptious combination. Think of all our
it
favorite
is.
Foods. Mac and cheese.
Right.
Bagels with cream cheese.
Pizza.
Pizza.
Fettuccine Alfredo.
Yeah. they are perfect yeah. combinations of that.
Right. Right. Exactly. So it's that mouthfeel.
Ice cream.
Yes. You know, the mouthfeel
sugar
that...
Sugar and fat. Sugar
that,
and fat.
It's the mouthfeel that the fat creates.
Right.
Which is very
so
important.
So check out, you know, Google the autumnal diet.
The autumnal diet.
Right.
Okay, moving on. Let's see here.
You know what we need to do? We need to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. So
you're
give us
kidding.
A preview. Yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
Oh,
sorry. This is a long one. So just preview.
This is a long one. After rounds and rounds of antibiotics, this person has come down with boils and mouth ulcers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nasty. All right. Well, this sounds like a consult.
Yeah.
So let's defer that to part two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back with more.